and welcome to episode 37 of the Movie Marathoners podcast. I'm your host, Mati, and today I am honored to be joined by Rosa Parra from Rosa's Reviews. Thank you so much for being here, Rosa. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, hello, everybody. I'm doing excellent today. Thank you so much for inviting me to your podcast. It's an honor to be here.
Well, it is an honor to have you. I just said that, but I mean, I think you write some really amazing pieces, and you're just a wonderful presence on Twitter, and I'm really excited to talk to you about this film in specific as well. So,
oh, thank you so much. It's really kind of you.
So this week, we'll be running through the film Portrait of a Lady on Fire. We'll warm up. That's not a pun on the fire. It's a pun on warming up for a marathon or whatever. But we'll warm up with brief spoiler-free thoughts on the film. And then for the bulk of the episode, we'll run into spoiler territory where we can talk freely about the film. And as usual, we'll round out the episode with our point two section where we discuss what else we've been watching. So first, let's read a synopsis of Portrait of a Lady on Fire. On an isolated island in Brittany at the end of the 18th century, a female painter is obliged to paint a wedding portrait of a young woman. The film stars Noemi Merlant and Adèle Haenel, and it is written and directed by Céline Sciamma.
Je suis peintre. L'homme intéressé par ma fille est Milanais. Nous partons là-bas si le portrait lui plaît. Il a épuisé déjà un peintre avant vous.
Que s'est-il passé?
Je ne sais pas.
Il vous attend. Ça fait des années que je rêve de faire ça. Mourir. Courir.
So Rosa, I know when we were talking about this before we started recording, you mentioned that you were going to try and see this twice or kind of remind yourself of the film. Did you get a chance to see this more than once?
Yes, I think I just finished watching it again like an hour ago.
Okay.
I've seen it multiple times. I just wanted to refresh my memory because I've also seen other films. So I was able to watch it again.
Yeah, awesome. And I was too. I saw this on Saturday and we're recording on Sunday, so it's fresh in my mind as well. And I was really excited to get to see it a second time because there was a lot of things that I picked up on a second time that I didn't necessarily get on that first time. But Rosa, why don't you just tell me in general what your thoughts on the film are?
I love this film. It's my favorite film of last year. I've been writing about this film for different sites and as well as my blog. And the only way I can describe this film is it's a masterpiece. It's just a beautiful film to look at, a beautiful film to just watch unfold on the big screen, from the production design to the costume design to cinematography, the script, the acting. Oh my God, so many memorable moments. And it was just, for me, it's no pun intended, but it's just like watching a portrait or a painting, just live action version of it. And I just love this film. It's just, there's so much I can talk about. And I just love this film. I adore it.
I heard so much about this film going into it. And I actually got a chance to, I'm Boston based, and there was a showing at one of our local kind of nonprofit theaters, and Céline Sciamma was going to be there to do a Q&A after the film. It was kind of the first weekend that it went wide release. I didn't see it until mid-February. And so I was super excited for that. I got the tickets, and then we found out that she ended up, her flight got canceled because of frost or something stupid. But she did end up getting to do a Q&A via Skype with us. So that was really cool. And so we got to see her talk about the film a little bit. So I was going into this film with really high hopes, really high expectations. And I would say that it absolutely met all those expectations. And I think one of the things that this film does so well is that, you know, it is a Scorsese-approved cinema. It's a piece of cinema. It's got this air of elegance and sophistication to it, but it's not pretentious in a way that a lot of kind of art house cinema can be. I think in the same way that Parasite is, it doesn't forget to be entertaining. And you get so engaged in this story and these characters that you're almost forgetting that you're watching a film in a different language or a film that is working on these deeper levels than some other types of films that are more just a romance story. So I agree. Right. I think this film is phenomenal and I loved seeing it a second time.
Nice. Wow. So, okay, we'll probably get into this more, but unfortunately I wasn't able to attend any of the screenings where they were doing Q&As, but yeah, I am intrigued to see what you guys learned, what you learned from Celine Sciamma and such.
Yeah, so it was all pretty, you know, general things. The woman who kind of led the panel had some pretty interesting questions, and she was talking about kind of the decisions of, you know, just in general of female film making and things like that. And then mm-hmm. she kind of opened it up to the audience questions, and the audience questions weren't very good. There was one guy that started the audience Q&A portion by going up and being like, you know, do you have some advice for people who are prospective aspiring filmmakers, which is probably the most blasé basic question you can ask in a Q&A. You know, she did an okay job handling it. She kind of teased him at first. She was like, you know, what do you want to know? Kind of. But yeah, it was really interesting to get to hear her talk about it.
Nice.
There's a lot to kind of unpack in this film, and I'm not quite sure how to go about doing it, but I think one of the best ways to do that would be to kind of just jump into spoilers pretty quickly here. Is there anything non-spoiler that you want to kind of mention to people who are maybe on the fence about seeing the film or who haven't even heard about this film or anything like that?
Mm-hmm. Non-spoiler territory, probably just the technical aspect of it, how visually stunning. I mean, to me, it was visually stunning. The cinematography, it's just beautiful to look at. This is the type of film where no matter where the movie is at, if you can just stop the film, you can literally have a portrait just of that shot by itself. It's just gorgeous to look at. If I get into the story and the narrative, probably spoil a lot, but it's just gorgeous. And I'm aware it's not going to be a film for everybody. It's not like an action film, an action-filled film, but it is character-driven and such. So it is a kind of like a little slow burn, pun definitely intended. And but overall, I think it's a film everybody should at least give it a try. It's just visually beautiful. It's just filmmaking at its best, I would say.
Yeah, I did notice the second time around that slow burn aspect a little more, because I'll keep it vague just in case people don't know anything about this film. But the most exciting part of this film, I think, is the relationship between the two main characters. And mm-hmm. that relationship comes to the forefront in the latter half of the movie more so than in the first half. And so when correct. I was waiting for that part to happen and to kind of get the, again, pun not intended, or maybe it is intended, the flair of the movie, I did notice myself being like getting a little antsy. And it's a gorgeous film, but in the beginning, it does feel, you know, slow, and it certainly takes its time setting things up. So
yeah.
In terms of the cinematography, how would you best describe that? Because I'm having a difficult time trying to explain what exactly the film looks like, because, mm-hmm. you know, the colors, it's a very colorful film, but there's something about the hue of the colors or something that makes the film pop in this not exactly loud way, in the same way that something like Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is very vibrant. How would you explain that?
Good question. perfect. Great question. For me, the colors aren't, they're not vibrant at all. They seem more natural to me.
Yeah.
Especially the shots, when a lot of the shots are in the beach and such. And I think it's a combination of having balance. Well, I called just balanced shots, when you just have a scene and then everything within that scene is just balanced. And shots like that are also, for me, they were just amazing. And as well as the, there's a lot of scenes. I'm a sucker. Let me just clarify. I'm a sucker for period pieces. And especially for shots and scenes that happen like with candlelight alone. Like the shadows and everything about it, it's just scenes like that that just make me love film even more. But in regards to the cinematography, yes, the shots are not, the colors are not vibrant or such. That to me, they look more natural. And I don't even know what else to describe it.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. Maybe because it was, oh man, I don't even know how to describe it. It just looked very real and just natural to the point where it just engrosses you into the film. And at some point, I'm sure the sound design also was just beautiful in it. To the point where you just feel that you're inside of the movie and you're just the next, like another spectator just sitting in those rocks, just watching these two characters pretty much like fall in love.
Yeah. And so this film, I guess we should say for people who don't know anything about it, is that it doesn't have a score, really. There's like two musical cues, but other than that, it's all natural sound. And that absence of that, you feel that. And I think that's a good way of putting it. It makes you feel like you are just sitting in the beach next to them, as opposed to watching a film in the same way. You're kind of just watching a relationship.
Yep.
So why don't you just, I read your review online, so I know what your score would be out of 10 for this, but why don't you just summarize really quickly and then give me your score for this, and then we can hop right into spoilers.
Okay. Well, like I said, I just adore this film, everything about it, the technical aspect, the narrative, the script, everything. So, I gave it a 10 out of 10. It was my, like I said, my favorite film of 2019, and to me, it's a perfect film.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I'm not quite as high, but I would still give it a 8.5, maybe even a 9 out of 10. I think, everything you said, I agree with. It is a wonderful film. And you said it your best with its cinema at its finest. That probably sounds really pretentious, especially from, most of my podcast episodes are about like Birds of Prey and Avengers Endgame and things like that. But I really did think this movie was incredible, and I would definitely recommend this to people in a heartbeat. So with that, let's move into spoilers. I will say spoilers for Portrait of a Lady on Fire starting now.
That's my secret, Cat. I'm always angry.
Oh man, so there is so much that we could talk about, and there is so much rich texture here. I'll just start with a pretty basic question that's maybe not as basic as it seems, but what did you make of the title? What's the meaning of the Lady on Fire in this film to you?
Mm-hmm. Interesting question. well, of course, it is literally a portrait of a woman whose dress is on fire, but in a poetic
right, yeah,
and in a poetic sense, I'm thinking. I hadn't actually thought about it until now that you're putting me on the spot.
I'm sorry.
I'm thinking it's about no, it's perfectly fine. I love to be asked these questions. I'm thinking it's just a portrait, like a picture or such of a woman who's pretty much being placed in a position that she was not meant to be in. We can talk spoilers now. So after the death of her sister, she is now to marry somebody for the family's sake and such. So she's placed in a position that she doesn't want to be in. I don't know if it's probably being too simplistic or maybe even cliche. She's pretty much being thrown in fire. But I don't know. That's an interesting question. I had not thought about it until now.
Yeah. So, I mean, when I knew I was going to the screening, I tweeted out something saying that, oh, you know, ask, is there any questions I should ask the Celine Sciamma about this? And my friend jokingly tweeted back at me something like, ask her why the lady's on fire. And I just, okay, whatever. Yeah. You know, he's just kind of being an ass, making fun of me a little bit. And, but then I realized that there's one part in the movie where the actual portrait of her is on fire. And then, of course, later on in the film, it is actually her on fire. And then the final portrait of her is her on fire. So I just think it's a really, you know, it's a clever title and it's really interesting. And I think there's definitely something to do with this sense of passion between Eloise and Marion that is kind of like a fire. It's very intense, but it's also short-lived and it's going to be put out, and they know it's going to be put out. And I think that part of the film, I think, is so interesting, and Sciamma really plays with that, this idea that we know that this is not going to end well. You know, we know that this is short-termed. I also just loved the tension in this movie, just as a romantic film, you know, just as pure romance. It is, I was just a sucker for, you know, the looks and there's so much sexual tension between these two. It's incredible.
Yes. Yeah. The looks, they portray so much just with their eyes and just the way they look at each other. They're not even... Well, yeah, there's a few scenes where they're sitting right next to each other and such, like when they're doing, when she's playing the piano or that instrument. And it's just, I know, probably another pun here, but sparks are flying everywhere when those two are just
they're just coming to you.
They're just coming to me. And absolutely. The acting in this film is phenomenal. They just... Like I say, they convey so much just with so little, just their presence, their body language, their facial expressions. It's just, oh man.
Yeah. So the moment that I realized that I was just basically in love with the film and super invested in this relationship was the night that they play cards together. And off the top of your head, do you know the cinematographer's name? I don't remember it. It's
darn it. I did not write it down. I don't remember.
Claire Mathen. That's who it is. So there's this moment where Claire Mathen is filming them playing with, doing the card game, and she's not even fixating on the card. She's fixating on, like, you don't see what's happening in the action. You see them looking at each other and them making eye contact with each other and with, Sophie, who is the third character in this film. And that moment, I was just like, oh, I'm sold. I am so invested in this relationship. Can they just need to get married and be in love forever. And, it was great.
Yeah.
And then the second time I saw it, I went with a date, and, she, around the bonfire period, she just turned to me and was like, when are they going to kiss? This is too much. They need to kiss. Come on. And I loved that she was that invested in the movie. And then when they eventually did kiss, which was like the next scene, she was like, finally. So I think this movie does a great job playing with all of that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It does make you a bit anxious and at times even frustrated. They build up the relationship so well that, yeah, you just can't wait for them to just kiss or even touch, like, your hand or just hold hands or something.
Yeah, well, the film very much does kind of make you feel those universal thoughts of love, or the steps of love, or the steps of the start of a new relationship, which, I mean, we haven't even mentioned this, which is great, is that, you know, it is a homosexual relationship in this film. And I think Celine Sciamma, is all her films have been about that, but to me it's just such it's a more universal thing than that, and this is just a romantic film, and I don't know, I it was lovely.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. I think that, yeah, it's a love story to me. And because as a woman, overall, I think this is perhaps one of the most feminist films I watched of 2019, not only because of the theme, the topics within the story, but it's directed by a woman, it's starring women, and it's shot by women, the costume designs by women. So in general, it's a film that just feels that it's a film that it's just a love story, regardless if it's either homosexual or heterosexual or whatever, however you want to refer it to as. Right. But it's a movie that, yeah, it's more of a universal thing. It's just about love. Like, love is love, and it's just a story about love. That's how I saw it.
Yeah. So, and then there's also this story that, you know, a Greek myth that's kind of at the center of this Greek myth of Orpheus and Eurydice, I think is how you pronounce it. Had you heard this myth or anything before they talked about it in the story?
Absolutely not.
No. Okay. Yeah. I mean, me neither. So just like as a summary, right, Orpheus, he goes to the underworld to bring back his dead wife, Eurydice, or however you say that. And Hades says, okay, Orpheus, you can lead Eurydice back to the land of the living. And if you look forward and you do not look back until you have gotten to the real world or whatever. And but Orpheus at one point looks back to make sure that Eurydice is following him because he's worried that he can't hear her and that, you know, he kind of gets impatient and wants to see her, whatever the reason is. And so Eurydice ends up getting pulled back to the underworld and she's lost to him forever. And the characters kind of have this debate about why Orpheus decided to turn around. You have Sophie, who says that he's just an idiot, which I thought was funny. It was a very, very naive and hilarious response, I thought, from that, which is sort of what I, as the audience member, had when I hadn't heard about any of the, you know, poetic aspects of this myth. And then you have Marianne, who argues and says that he is actually making the poet's choice by choosing to preserve Eurydice as a memory instead of having her as a person. And then Eloise, of course, says that Eurydice is the one who actually calls out and asks Orpheus to turn around. And so this whole kind of thing plays out at a couple different moments in the story. The main one, obviously, being the relationship between Eloise and Marianne as she's leaving. I guess I don't have a specific question about this, but what did you make of that whole thing at the end of Marianne asking Eloise to turn around and then Eloise sees her there, or no, other way around. Eloise asking Marianne to turn around, and she turns around and sees her.
Yeah. Now that I'm actually getting to talk about the film more here with you, I'm just realizing a lot of things, a lot of the sequences. I think it's pretty much a foreshadowing of what's going to happen. And she, Marianne, is more like of the poetic person. She represents him, and then Eloise ends up towards the end, she ends up calling her name and such. But there were several scenes where a lot of foreshadowing happens, like you said earlier, the portrait on fire, and then within a few scenes after, we see Eloise, who is literally on fire. Well, as there was a few scenes where Marianne would like walk around and then she would see Eloise with the white dress, her wedding dress, I'm assuming. And then that was her last memory of her when she left the castle or the house, whatever it was. I think it's more of a foreshadowing of where what was going to happen and how all of this was going to end. I think now that I'm talking about it and think about it, it's pretty brilliant. Oh my God, it makes me love this film even more.
Yeah, I mean, I after seeing it that second time, I just was trying to think about this thing the whole time I was watching it. This idea of choosing to turn around or asking to turn around, and that, I mean, I've read a couple. I wish I had was able to cite some of the articles that I read about this, but this film is clearly about the power of a look and the subject of looking, and how when you look at someone or you are somebody is your subject, then you intrinsically are their subject. And there's this two-way street of looking and having a subject and an artist or whatever. And I think all of this plays into just this really phenomenal idea that sometimes just the most important part of the relationship is preserving the memory and making that last look, and that is almost more powerful than them ending up together at the end of the film or whatever.
Yeah, I entirely agree. And yeah, now that you're mentioning this, yeah, throughout the film, Marianne starts just looking at her to try to paint her just via memory. And then even the paintings that they have of each other. And yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I completely agree. Yeah.
So what did you make of the ending? I thought that was, it's a pretty incredible ending. In your review, you mentioned that people were saying that it's a callback to, or not a callback, but similar to another ending of a film from a couple years ago.
Uh-huh.
I'm not quite sure which film you're talking about.
Oh, Call Me by Your Name, with Timothée Chalamet and Armie Hammer.
Yeah. Okay.
Like
so
the post credit scene with Timothée Chalamet just sitting there, but yeah, I think he's looking at a fireplace or something, and
yeah,
he just starts crying and just thinking about him. But I think that this film does it a bit better.
Yeah.
Just because like I said, I just watched it an hour ago, so that scene is just in my head at the moment. And when I saw the scene, well, first of all, I think the first powerful scene that I saw was when Marianne saw another portrait of Heloise. And she sees her with a daughter now and such. And then she has the book in her hand with page 28. That was powerful to me. And just to see her reaction and such. And then the last time she sees her again, and they start playing the song that that Marianne was playing earlier in the film, and just how Heloise is overcome with emotions. And she's just remembering, because the last time they were in bed together, Heloise tells her, "I'm beginning to feel something I've never felt before, which is regret." And Marianne tells her, "Don't feel regret, just remember. Just remember and just have those memories and fun moments that we had." So you can tell in that last scene that Heloise is just overcome with memories, and she's just remembering everything she went through with Marianne. And towards the middle, right before that scene ends, you can see her smiling because she's just remembering everything. So yeah, I love that ending. That ending, every time I watched it, it's caught me every single time. So it's just a powerful, powerful ending to me. I loved it.
I also think what works about that ending in a kind of a tragic way is that you as the audience want her to turn and look at and see Marianne. And because she lingers so long on Eloise, you're thinking, okay, she's going to turn. That's what would happen in kind of a more like gooey kind of romantic film. Like she would see her from across the room and they would make eye contact and everything. And you as the audience member wants that to happen, but she literally says that she didn't see her. Like we are told that she's not going to turn and look at her, but the whole time you're kind of, you want that release and that satisfaction of seeing Eloise turn and look at Marianne, but she doesn't get that. Sciamma doesn't give that to us in the same way that the characters ultimately don't get that last moment either. And I thought that was really, that resonated with me for quite some time. I thought it was fantastic.
No, I completely agree. Same thing. I when I was watching the film, I was waiting for her to turn, but even though behind we already knew she wasn't, you just have that little hope that either she does turn and Marianne's no longer sitting there or something, that was just gonna happen, but no, it doesn't. So
this also, the ending also reminds me a little bit of Midsommar, where you've got a blonde woman who's really upset at first, and then she ends with a smile, and there's loud music playing in the background as she's thinking about a relationship. I just thought that was very much reminiscent of Midsommar. So
Midsommar, interesting. Yeah. I actually never connected those two scenes together. Interesting. Okay.
I mean, they're obviously, you know, in completely different contexts and everything like that. But so what did you think about the Sophie character in general?
I thought it was just, how can I say this? I liked it. I liked her little storyline. To me, it was more of a representation of women and having control because of the situation. Having control of her body and what, at the time, although I was completely ignorant when we first meet her, and then she says she's pregnant and such. And she says she doesn't want to have the baby. So she starts doing all these things to try to have a natural abortion. But the things she was doing, I thought they were, I was completely ignorant because I didn't know a lot of the things that were done back in the day to try to have that happen. But her character in general, I thought it was more of a way for the two lead characters to bond, to spend more time together because of that situation, of Sophie's situation. And so a lot of the conversations between Marianne and Heloise came to be, especially when she asks, Heloise asks Marianne if that's ever happened to her. And she says, she admits that it has. And she's like, well, have you ever been in love? And then the more bonding occurred between them because of Sophie's, because of her storyline and such. But I thought it was, I didn't mind it. I mean, I didn't love it, but I didn't mind the storyline and such.
Yeah, it's a very interesting storyline. And I think you're right. I think I agree that she kind of is almost the catalyst to their relationship. Like, you can't just have the two of them alone. Otherwise, right. It sort of feels like they're getting forced upon each other. Whereas in this, it, you know, they're almost kind of like bonding over their sort of maternal love for Sophie. So that part I did like. I didn't totally think that, you know, compared to the other two actors, I thought the actress who plays Sophie was not nearly as good. But I think her role as sort of like a plot catalyst was useful in the film for sure.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah.
So one other kind of observation I had about the film that I think is sort of silly, and it's, you know, it's half in jest, but I feel like this film is just like a really fancy and well-made romantic comedy in the sense that you've got these two characters who are kind of pit and forced together, and one has to do a job, and they don't necessarily like each other at the start of it. And then they kind of spend, you know, this weekend or this pretty short period of time together, and they find out that they're not so different, and they're falling in love. And there's even that kind of third act thing where one of them says something that upsets the other one, and they have a fight, and they have to win each other back. And, there was a lot of these almost romantic comedy kind of tropes in the film that I thought was pretty funny when I was, oh, it's a rom-com.
It's a rom-com. Interesting. Okay. Yeah. No, I agree. Even though they're not, the ending is not so, so positive. Yeah, they did have a little fight, and then, I think you're right. Yeah.
There's even a drug scene at one point, which is pretty common in like a comedy.
Yes, there is.
And there's a Pitch Perfect musical in the middle. This is Pitch Perfect 4 with that the song Around the Bonfire. I thought that was a really cool scene. What were your thoughts on that in general?
I liked it. I mean, I'm not sure you didn't understand anything we were saying, but I liked it. Yeah. No. I did like it. I thought it was a really cool scene. Yeah.
So is there anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, no, I think everything we talked about is
yeah, awesome.
No, I don't.
Yeah. So, I mean, definitely go see this. If you, for some reason, listen to the spoiler part without having seen it, I'd say we'd still recommend go seeing it. This is definitely not a movie that is ruined by knowing that they don't end up together, which is basically the only thing that we really spoiled. So it's pretty clear where it's going. And I think the journey is significantly more than just like the collection of the individual pieces. So, all right, let's move on to our point two section where we talk about some of the other stuff that we've been watching. So Rosa, what else have you been watching?
I just recently, actually yesterday, I posted my review for The Invisible Man.
As the attorney representing Adrian's trust, I'm required to read a prepared statement. Cecilia, although our relationship was far from perfect, I thought that you would talk to me rather than run away.
Are you okay? What happened to him?
He cut his wrists. Per his final wishes, you're getting $5 million. Contingent, of course, on the fine print. He can't be ruled to be mentally incompetent.
It just doesn't make any sense.
What?
Adrian wouldn't kill himself.
Listen, you're getting your freedom back, okay? Don't let him haunt you.
Hello?
Oh man, I haven't seen this yet, but like film Twitter is just all over this movie.
You should go to watch it. I really enjoyed it. It was surprising to me. Of course, here are my puns again. I didn't see it coming, but it's a film that it's surprisingly enjoyable. It's suspenseful. It's thrilling. Twists and turns. If you've seen the trailer, don't worry. Trust me, the trailer does not give a lot away. And I mean, all I can say is just, if you've seen the film, just go watch my review. I'm not going to spoil anything here. I don't want to do that. But this film made me happy that the Universal Monsters universe didn't occur, because thankfully we have this film because of it. So yeah, no. Go watch it. Please do go watch it.
So is it a horror film? Like, is it scary? Or if there's somebody who's kind of adverse to horror films, for example, would you still recommend they go see that?
Yes, because I think it's very well done. It is somewhat of a horror film, not too much. It's kind of similar to A Quiet Place and Paranormal Activity, but not
okay.
As loud as Paranormal Activity. It's more leaning towards A Quiet Place with tension, the buildup and such. But yeah, it's not a full-on horror film.
Okay, and does it at all start any type of universe or anything like that? Or is this really just a standalone thing?
Good question. To me, but this is just my interpretation of the film, I think it might, yeah. To me, though.
To which one?
I mean, to me, my interpretation of the film, I think it does, yes.
It does set something up?
Wrong. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Interesting. All right. I mean, it's definitely on my watch list. I always have to kind of get into the right headspace to watch movies like this. But So that is The Invisible Man, and that is in theaters right now, correct?
Yes, it's in theaters.
Do you have anything else that you've been watching?
Let me see. I just watched Emma. It was really...
So you're on top of all the new releases.
Oh, yes. I'm trying to stay on top of it since I was at Sundance earlier this year. So whatever came out during that week or 2 week period, I wasn't able to go watch.
How was that? That was your first Sundance, right?
Yes, my first Sundance. I loved it. I loved everything about it except the weather. But other than that, it was amazing. The films I got to watch were amazing. And to me, although the films, you go to watch the films and get and such. But to me, the highlight of the festival was the networking. I was able to personally meet with people I interact with on film Twitter on a daily basis, and just being able to talk to them about movies and such. It was just memorable, unforgettable. I loved it.
How many films did you see?
I watched 20.
Oh my God. In how many days?
I was there for the whole festival, for the whole 10 days.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah. Roughly two a day?
Yeah, around there, yeah.
Yeah.
Two, yeah, sometimes three, or sometimes, yeah, or one, yeah.
That seems doable. I hear stories of some people going to like five or six a day, and they're basically up like 6 a.m. until, 12 midnight the next. I don't know how people do that. That's crazy, but...
It is crazy. Yeah, Matt Neglia was doing that over there. And I got to, of course, I got to meet him. That was pretty fun. But at the last day of the festival, we were just able to run into him, and he was just exhausted. I'm like, I have no idea how you're doing this, Matt. He's like, well, the 5-hour energy drinks are very good. And I was like, oh, man, it was. I don't know how that man is still alive, to be honest.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I don't know if I'd ever be able to do that. I usually cap out at like 3, maybe 4 if I'm like sick and it's, you know, really, really cold outside or something. But so Emma, you saw Emma. Did you like it?
Yeah, I did enjoy it. I really liked it. Again, period piece. So it's right down my alley. I think the acting was very well done. Anya Taylor-Joy was a joy to watch. Oh my God, I'm gonna make you lose subscribers here.
There's none to lose. You're fine.
She was just phenomenal to see the versatility she has. She's just at a whole other level. And of course, my favorite aspect of it was the production design and the costumes. Oh my gosh,
period so beautiful piece again.
And gorgeous. Yeah. They're just lovely. I really enjoyed it. It was very well done. I did have my issues with it, but I think I enjoyed it more than I had more positives to say about it than I do negative. So
is there something that sets it apart from other iterations or adaptations? Because I think I read Emma in high school. Mm-hmm. not voluntarily, certainly, but yeah. So it's very much a Pride and Prejudice, Jane Austen kind of book.
Yeah.
Do they kind of modernize it in any way, or what's sort of the selling point of it?
Good question, because I have not read the book, and I'm not familiar with the previous adaptations, the TV show and the Gwyneth Paltrow film. I have not seen it. So my only previous exposure to it was Clueless.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, it's definitely different than Clueless. So I think this film is the acting, but how can I say it? It tries at the beginning, my only issues with it was at the beginning, it tries a lot to be like the favorite with the jokes and such, yeah, that don't really land. It didn't land for me. And I know I'm in the minority, but I wasn't the biggest fan of the favorite.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I love the favorite. That's a period piece.
Exactly. I thought I was going to love it, but no.
Okay.
It wasn't for me. But then once it gets over that, because it does take a little while to start to get your attention and such. But once it does, it's just a great movie. But I think, yeah, those were some of my issues. I tried a little bit to be like the favorite, but it didn't work for it.
Okay. Yeah. So that's Emma, also in theaters. So check that out. It seems like, yeah. Emma period, I think is what it is, right?
Yep.
That's the actual title.
All capitals and period.
Yeah. Yep. So, and you just did a review about it. I will provide the link to that as well. I think you guys should definitely go check those out if for anybody listening. I think your reviews are great. But speaking of reviews that you've done, I did read your review of the film that I got to see recently, Sonic the Hedgehog.
I'm Sonic, a little ball of super energy in an extremely handsome package. On my planet, people were always after my powers. So I came to yours. It gets a little lonely, but that's okay. I am living my best life on Earth. Ow! Let the plate Sonic! Let the pitcher's mound also Sonic!
Ugh, I can't with that guy.
Uh-oh.
Ooh,
And we disagree, I think. I think I'm more with your daughter than you on this one. I loved this movie, and I don't, it's just a delight. And it just completely caught me off guard, I think, was the main thing. It was that, you know, you talk about it in your review. There was a huge thing with this movie where Sonic, the original design, looked like absolute shit. And then they kind of tracked back and were like, okay, we hear you. We're going to completely redo the entire Sonic design and reanimate the movie. And they pushed it back from whenever it was supposed to come out last year to February of this year. So I was kind of expecting, you know, I had a pretty low bar for it. I was like, oh, this is going to be another video game movie and it's probably going to be really dumb. But I don't know. I thought this movie was great. And I mean, you know, plot-wise, it's a dumb plot. It's a very basic plot. But
right.
I think what sold the movie for me was the interaction between the characters and specifically the energy that Sonic brings to it. And then the relationship between him and James Marsden, I really surprisingly bought, which is kind of weird because James Marsden is like super white bread for most of, you know, for the most part. And when he commits to a role, he's a great actor, but a lot of the time in these types of movies, he's just very kind of blah, but I found him very unblah. So, what do you want to talk a little bit about your issues with it? Tear me apart, destroy my hopes and dreams.
Oh no, I'm sorry. Yeah, it did not work for me.
Yeah.
I do. The CGI was good. It definitely was improved from the first trailer. But it just didn't work for me. I think it was, I didn't care about Sonic and, oh my God, you just said his name. I forgot his name.
James Marsden.
There we go. I didn't care about them. There was just something that didn't work for me. I don't know if it was, I don't think they had any chemistry at all. And it just did not work for me. So the jokes, oh my God, I know I'm not the targeted audience. I'm aware of it. And it just did not work for me. Like you said, the plot, no. And the only good thing was Jim Carrey and not even, sorry, he couldn't even say this movie.
Oh, yeah. Jim Carrey was just the icing on the cake for me. I thought he was fantastic. So, yeah, no, I mean, we're definitely on different, you know, different sides of the line on this one for sure. But Jim Carrey was so funny and it was great to see him just kind of being back to how crazy he was, you know?
Yeah, and then there were just some side characters that, yeah, did not work for me at all.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, this is not Scorsese approved cinema, certainly.
This is not cinema at its best. That's
no,
sure.
No, it is not. But you know, I think there's so many movies that your complaints I would completely agree with on, and I don't know, I can't exactly pinpoint what it is in this one that separates it, because I completely see what you're saying, and I don't I mean, I disagree, but I don't, it's not like a baffling thing. I'm not like, oh, I can't believe you came away with that opinion. Yet, you know, this movie is stupid. Yeah. but for whatever reason, it just worked, and maybe it's just the heart, or maybe I'm just biased a little bit to these kinds of movies because I really do, you know, I didn't grow up with Sonic as much as something like Detective Pikachu, for example, which I also just unequivocally loved. And I did go back to check your review and see what you thought of that one too, because I was like, maybe Rosa just hates all cute little animated animal movies, but you gave that one a good review, so.
Yes. No, Pikachu I did like.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see, there was something between Pikachu and the other character. There's something there that I did buy, and it did get to me, but not for Sonic.
Yeah. So depending on who you trust, Rosa or me, then either do or do not see this movie in theaters. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, I'm sure based on how we are talking about it, you, the listener, can determine whether this is the type of movie for you or not. So, but this Sonic the Hedgehog, also in theaters, it is making a lot of money, which is the other thing that I was like, even if this movie is good, which is there's no chance that it is, there's no way that this movie is going to make money, right? But it made more money than Detective Pikachu, which is crazy to me. So,
yeah,
who knows?
Making money.
Well, so anyways, this has been our review of Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Rosa, thank you again so much for being here, and it really was an honor to get to talk to you. Is there anything you'd like to plug?
Yes. Well, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me. This has been genuinely a blast, and I don't think I've smiled this much in a while.
thank
you for having me.
Yeah, of course.
I'm at any social platform, social media platform, on Instagram, Facebook, and on Twitter at Rosa's Reviews. And you can also find my work over at In Their Own League. You can go to intheironleague.com or just follow us over on Instagram and Twitter at In Their Own League. And again, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you again for coming on. And I do also want to just support In Their Own League. I think that's it's an amazing website and an amazing like coalition of women that you guys have over there. It's just, I really want to support that as much as possible. So I will provide all of those Twitters and things to follow there too. You should absolutely follow them, everybody there. The intro music for this episode is a piece called Work by Kevin MacLeod, and you can find more of his work at incompetech.com. If you'd like to keep up with this podcast and find out when we release new episodes, you can follow us on Twitter at MovieMaraPod or on Facebook at facebook.com/MovieMaraPod. That's Movie M-A-R-A Pod. And you can always reach out to us at our email, MovieMarathonersPod@gmail.com. You can find more episodes of this podcast on Podbean at moviemarathoners.podbean.com. And we are, of course, also on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and Spotify. So please subscribe or write a review if you like what we're doing. And any feedback you have to help improve the podcast is always appreciated. So thank you all for listening. And we hope you'll join us again next time when we discuss something related to Onward and maybe kind of a Pixar top five discussion. Still working out the details with that, but very excited for Onward and really excited to talk about Pixar for that one. So until then, bye.
Hi, this is comedian and writer, and let's be honest, I do a lot of things. This is Dino Tripodis, the host of Whiskey Business, the podcast not so much about whiskey as it is one with whiskey. Yes, we drink and talk about whiskey, but we do so much more with so many interesting people. For example, we talk to comedians like Greg Warren.
You know, I don't want to brag, but let's just say I can walk into a Red Lobster and get whatever. You know, I think the pause right there is probably more important than the word.
Amazing athletes like boxing champion Buster Douglas.
When a fighter's down and he's looking for his mouthpiece instead of trying to get up.
That's when I knew it was over.
Yeah, right?
And yes, Bigfoot chasers. Do you believe in Bigfoot? And if so, does he really eat beef jerky?
The Bigfoot thing is people have seen these and I've seen a lot of compelling evidence about it.
It's Whiskey Business with Dino Tripodis. Join us for what we call a good conversation with a good pour. You really can't ask for much more than that, can you, people? Check us out at WhiskeyBusinessPod.com, a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network.